Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
...of Says You. Today, difficult, interesting questions designed to challenge. The minutes will fly by.
Okay, that's where we're headed. That's the road we're going down. I hope none of you had dinner plans.
If you haven't heard us yet, remember, we are one of the most highly rated shows on all of public radio.
Like how much stinkage it is?
It's within...
Yes, that's exactly right. Perhaps it's our thirst for knowledge that most intrigues our listeners, our dogged, relentless pursuit of fact and knowledge.
Well, you know what? That's as good an answer as any, because the answer is scientists have absolutely no idea whatsoever.
It's back to Portland, Maine we go, a down east hoop-de-doo. So please don't change the radio. Back shortly with Says You.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. Aftershocks have been rattling northwest Iran, where rescuers are searching for survivors from the two big earthquakes that struck this weekend. The quakes reduced at least half a dozen villages to rubble, and the death toll is rising. State TV says at least 250 people were killed, with more than 2,000 injured. Arizona Senator John McCain says he's pleased by Mitt Romney's decision to pick Wisconsin Congressman Paul Ryan as his vice presidential running mate.
Excellent choice. A new generation of leadership in our party and our nation. A man who understands the most compelling challenges this nation faces, obviously, are jobs in the economy.
McCain spoke on Fox News Sunday. Democrats, though, from Ryan's congressional district in Wisconsin are raising concerns about his record. Chuck Quirnbach of Wisconsin Public Radio reports.
Paul Ryan has represented Wisconsin's 1st congressional district for 14 years. The district includes the city of Racine, where Corey Mason is a state representative. Mason told local Democrats that he's stunned that Ryan is on the Republican ticket.
Honestly, I almost feel bad for Mitt Romney. I mean, what a terrible mistake. I mean, he is now going to be saddled with the Ryan budget.
Ryan's budget proposals aim to cut taxpayer spending in large programs like Medicare and Medicaid. Ryan argues the changes are needed to reduce the federal budget deficit. For NPR News, I'm Chuck Quirnbach in Milwaukee.
Oppressive heat is banking the western United States. Record high temperatures being sent from Colorado to California. As Mark Moran of member station KJZZ in Phoenix reports, heat warnings have been issued for much of the region.
Setting a record high temperature in Phoenix isn't easy to do in the summertime. It's always pretty hot, but it happened on three consecutive days last week. The high of 116 on Wednesday is just 4 degrees shy of the temperature at which the airport stops flights because planes haven't been tested in that kind of heat. Arizona, California, Colorado, Idaho, Montana, Nevada, New Mexico, and Utah all have above average heat for this time of year. Meteorologists credit an extremely intense high pressure system. Fire officials are on high alert, and some states are on the lookout for hungry bears. The heat has withered their normal food source, forcing them into populated areas in search of food. For NPR News, I'm Mark Moran in Phoenix.
The eighth tropical storm of the Pacific season has formed. The National Hurricane Center's Richard Pasch says it's being called Hector.
It's to the west of the coast of Mexico, about 250 miles to the west of Manzanillo. It is moving toward the west-northwest, and it's on a track that will take it away from Mexico and is no threat really to any land areas at this time.
Forecasters expect Hector to strengthen but move farther out to sea over the next few days. And from Washington, this is NPR News. The U.S. men's basketball team still must play Spain today in a rematch of their gold medal game from Beijing. And there are other medals to hand out today, but for the most part, the London Olympics are winding down. The track and field competition ended today with the men's marathon. It attracted huge crowds who watched as Stephen Kiprotich broke away from two Kenyan rivals to win Uganda's first gold medal of the London Games.
It means a lot. Since 1972, we have never won a medal. So today I'm very happy to become the second Ugandan Olympic medalist.
Perhaps the biggest track star to emerge from the Games is Jamaica's Usain Bolt. He won his third gold medal of the Summer Games this weekend, anchoring his relay team to a world record victory in the men's 4x100-meter relay. From London, here's NPR's Tom Goldman.
How fast were the Jamaicans? The American sprinters tied the old world record and finished second. The last men to run for each team, Ryan Bailey for the U.S. and Usain Bolt for Jamaica, got their batons about the same time, meaning race over. Bolt exploded down the straightaway and leaned at the tape for an otherworldly 36.84-second world record. After Bolt won the 100 and 200 meters in London, repeating what he did at the Olympics 4 years ago, he proclaimed himself a legend. International Olympic Committee President Jacques Roga disagreed. Bolt talked about it after the race.
I think you should ask him what he's saying needs to do that no human has ever done, because I've done it already. So
Bolt has now won 6 Olympic gold medals in 6 events over the past 2 Summer Games. Tom Goldman, NPR News, London.
The U.S., meanwhile, has clinched the overall race for Olympic medals and leads second place China in gold. I'm Giles Snyder, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the idea that all people deserve the chance to live healthy, productive lives, at GatesFoundation.org.
Welcome to Says You, a game of bluff and bluster, words and whimsy.
Support for Says You in Portland comes from the University of Southern Maine. Degree programs in the arts, sciences, business, and more. On the web at usm.maine.edu.
Now, join our panelists and your host, Richard Schur.
Thank you. Thank you. From Hannaford Hall in the Abramson Center on the campus of the University of Southern Maine, welcome to Says You, a simple game with words played by two teams, the first of which sits stereo right. He's the guy that put the scow in old Skowhegan, Tony Khan. She expects her welcome in Maine to be just Socko, Lenore Shannon. And not to be callous, but he sure could use a bath, Mr. Murray Horwitz. Sorry, Murr.
No, you're not.
I know, not at all. Who leads on this occasion?
Mr. Khan.
Huh? Oh, I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah.
Tony.
The old,
ready,
the
ready
old
and conscious.
Scow himself.
The old scour himself. Tony Khan will be the captain. To my left, team two. She's a beacon of light in a storm of triviality. Paula Lyons. She's a sheltered cove in a tempest of mediocrity, Carolyn Faye Fox. And he's a harbor of humor, a doctor of letters, a port of last resort, Mr. Arnie Raceman. And who leads this week?
The sheltered cove will be the captain.
Yes.
Carolyn.
Can I read what it says on this bottle?
Yes.
This must stand for something, but it says our company has built one of the world's largest pet recycling plants. I'm serious. I've been staring at this sentence now. Pet must stand for something, right? Please?
He means, please eat this.
No.
But shame on you for not drinking Poland Spring.
Yeah. We'll put these here.
That's right. Yes, Carolyn will be the captain. Correct answers are worth 10 points, whatever fraction thereof deemed appropriate. We always advise new listeners, grab a pen and paper. Let's begin a return to the category we call measuring up. For 10 points, how much, how many, how far, or how long are the following units of measure? Carolyn, a shock.
A shock?
Yes.
How much is a shock?
A shock of hair.
Exactly. A shock of hair? Like
is that what you mean? A shock of hair rather than a... Like,
not shock treatment?
No,
shock of hair, like a bunch.
A shock of hair, a bunch.
It's a bunch.
A handful.
A handful, yes.
Well, yeah. Can you be specific? This is a specific unit of quantity, yes.
A handful, you said that. Okay, my handful.
Half a cup.
Half a cup. Could be.
A right handful.
Well, you're right to think of the shock of hair, although this normally applies to hay baling and harvest.
Shock of hair.
Oh, hay baling and harvest.
Harvesting,
okay.
Yeah.
Harvesting. Okay,
take
so
a wild
shock
guess.
Would be
one, it's a half a bale.
One forkful.
One forkful?
No.
With a
one
pitchfork. A pitchfork full.
A shock of hair.
You know, it could be. I don't think so, but...
But you say it could be.
Well, I'll give you points for it, but take a shot at it.
We're taking shots. They're going everywhere.
Yes, they are taking shots.
Nothing seems to be hitting the target.
Right. Come up with a number.
A number?
Well,
yeah.
Okay. One pitchfork full.
14 cubic feet.
An eighth of a bale.
An eighth of a bale. No. I'm going to give you 5 points for the noble struggle. Go to the other side. What do you think? Anybody know the number?
I have myriad definitions.
Yes.
And so what about, is it as much as someone could carry?
No.
Okay, so
like
then
you.
Forget that.
Oh, it's a...
Is it
a roll.
Much,
it's a roll in the hay.
Anybody in the audience know what a shock is? No? Well...
No, never.
It is actually, as shock would imply, German. It's a traditional German unit of quantity equal to 60, which is 70 or 50. All right, we're going to go with that. We're going to give you 5 points, which you can consider a great moment of generosity. And we're going to go to Tony for Tony, a homestead.
A homestead.
Oh.
A homestead would be a pile of land given for free,
yes,
as long as a donkey can stretch. If you take a big shock of hay and you stick it in front of him, kind of like a carrick, only yellower.
We think that this is exactly the amount that was many African Americans were cheated out of, as Spike Lee's production company is called 40 Acres and a Mule. We think it's 40 acres.
It's when
it is not 40
acres.
No,
it's when they first started to colonize, as it were, the Western Territory.
Yeah.
There was a land rush, basically, and if you rushed out there, you could claim just by basically throwing an ox down or whatever you had to do to
throwing an ox
down. You were serious.
Put a half Nelson on that puppy.
They were called the homesteaders. So I'd say
a homestead
just about enough to contain a homesteader.
Well, it really is. I mean,
his donkey.
But it is a certain number of acres.
Yeah,
right?
It's not 40 acres. It's bigger than that.
It's bigger than 40 acres. 41 acres.
No, it's not that either. We'll give you
120 acres.
Well, you're actually fairly close with that one. Any help from the other side?
150 acres.
It is 160 acres.
160
acres.
Is it a hectare?
It's a quarter of a square mile.
Oh.
They give four. There were four homesteads to a square mile. That's how they apportioned it in those days. Try this one, Arnie. What might be measured by an olf?
An
olf. O-L-F, olf.
Oh.
O-L-F. I thought you meant us.
I thought he said an oaf.
It's 3/4 of a wolf.
I don't know whether to give them points or take points away.
It's when you have that reverse flow problem.
It's a unit of a sense of smell.
It is.
Well, that's olfactory. So is it from olfactory?
It is.
Oh.
And you want to take a shot at it? You've got a lot of points.
Like how much stinkage it is?
It's within...
Yes, that's exactly right. It is an olfactory measurement, the indoor odor intensity produced by one standard person.
Or a guy from back.
Used how? How is this used and by whom?
I think you need to look that up.
Is this
perfume
a plumbing
industry.
Term?
Perfume industry.
Excuse
Very
me.
Very old French.
Produced by, this is the amount of stink produced by one standard person?
Yes.
It's the amount of perfume you would need to cover up the stink from one standard
person. I don't know. Try this one. Try this one, Lenore. A story.
Oh.
Well, a story is a vertical measurement of height for a building.
10 feet.
Yeah.
So you're going to ask me how much it is. Tony says it's 10 feet.
In a commercial... No, you say no? It's measured floor to floor, floor surface to floor surface. And in commercial buildings or taller buildings, it is, yes, 10 to 12 feet is correct. How about a residence? You got any ideas for that?
A residence?
Yeah.
An apartment building?
What's a likely story?
I don't understand your question.
For a residence, how much is it? 8 feet.
8 to 10, I'd guess.
Actually, yeah, it's 9 feet.
That doesn't seem like it would be enough.
It's 9 feet in a residence, 10 to 12 feet in a building. Do you know by any chance how this how it came to be called a story?
No, tell us.
Tell us.
Once upon a time.
No, tell us.
Let's find out. In medieval times, a tier of sculptures or stained glass windows in the front of a cathedral was called a story because it usually told a story. And the number... Ooh, we got a news. See that? Wise guy. And the number of stories was the measure of the size of the building. So that's
It's spelled differently, right?
Yes, S-T-O-R-E-Y.
Right.
Was that. Try this one, Paula. What might be meant by a dog watch?
A dog watch?
A dog watch. Oh, my God, I hope it's not.
It takes you 7 years to look at something.
No, it doesn't.
Well, dogs don't have any place to carry their cell phones, so sometimes they wear a watch.
No, never. A dog watch.
Oh, a dog watch.
A dog watch.
It's not a measure of...
Are we talking about guarding, that kind of watch?
In a way, yes.
Is it a period of time?
It is a period of time.
Okay.
So as long as a dog stays awake?
It has nothing to do with the dog, actually.
Oh, it
has
to do with the dog.
It's you watching
the dog. It is the worst assignment of an overnight guard watch?
You're very close.
Yeah,
you're
for military
it's
police.
The dog hour, like,
yeah,
you know, between
like the hour,
2 and
yeah.
4 or something like that.
Well, you know what? You got that it's 2 hours, so I'm going to give you the 10 points.
Oh, okay. Wow. That's cool.
It is a watch on a boat, on a ship.
On a ship.
Ah.
A unit of time on ships at sea equal to 2 hours because it is one half the usual length of a watch. A dog watch, and it's usually confined to the late hours when it's really hard to stay awake for 4 hours. You get a dog watch instead of a watch.
Why is it called a dog watch?
I don't know.
I bet it's because dogs can't last much beyond that.
Probably.
Either. Yeah.
And finally, Murray, what might be meant by the unit of measurement, a word?
W-O-R-D. Well, do you say, might I have a word? I mean, is it a measurement of time?
It is not. Well, it is not.
A word.
When might a word be a unit of measurement?
It's a unit of agreement in,
right, I give
in
you
certain
my
communities.
Word.
You say,
word. Word up.
No.
Word up. Maybe it's a measurement word. Of height. There's word up. And
Is it an acronym?
No. When might a word be a unit of measurement?
Word.
An official unit of measurement, actually.
In a tweet.
No.
That's
really.
You know,
well, is it a legal contract?
Telegram.
Yeah. No, is it? You know, you can only tweet whatever it is, 17 words or certain.
Yeah, that's characters. Why I stopped when I heard it. That's a good guess. It's not correct. It's not.
Does it come from telegraphy? Or
and
is
you've
it older
heard this
than
many
that?
Times, I'm sure.
Really?
Oh yeah.
Golly.
Many times.
We talk about measuring our words.
No, I wouldn't say.
Is it commercial? That is, you're only allowed a certain
Would it be a measure of length to begin with?
Yes.
Okay. So it is the amount of letters or the longest a word can be within a certain space. What is that space?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Oh, good for you.
Right.
He's dancing all around it.
Something to do with signage?
No, it's about length and it's
about headlines? Headline counting out headlines?
No.
Is it about setting type? Is
it in there? Oh, boy,
telegrams.
No, Arnie, help him out.
Oh, no, I thought it was about printing, isn't it?
We're just talking about. It's not about
broadcasting.
No.
God knows we don't stick here on words.
There's a speed component in this also.
Words per second that you can type?
That's exactly right. It is a measurement of typing speed. When you are trying to determine typing speed, you talk in terms of words per minute.
Per minute. Yes.
A standard word is 5 characters, including spaces.
Wow.
So that's how you determine accurately what your typing speed is, by determining a word. So thank you for playing that round. I always enjoy
it. Thank you for being over.
You know, we're here for your enjoyment.
That's what
I'm glad that you had a good time.
I don't know. Did you enjoy that round? You know.
Richard, and of course, this will sound very different on the radio.
Oh, yeah. Let's go on to round 2, which is played with a little musical help from the Tom Porter Quartet. Carolyn, each of you will receive a card defining a word. Only one has the actual definition. The other two have blank cards. Those poor souls have a few seconds to make up a definition on the spot, good enough to fool Tony's team. 10 points are up for grabs to Tony if he can find the bluffer, or to you, Carolyn, if he can't. Take a few seconds to come up with a definition for the word contributed by David Hench of Portland, Maine. Thank you, David. That word is glinn. G-L-I-N-N. Glinn. Gentlemen? Says You rounds out its fall schedule of tapings with newly announced stops in Hartford, Connecticut, and Syracuse, New York. On Friday, October 12th, we're at the University of Hartford for one night only. And then November 16th and 17th, we return to upstate New York for a Mohawk weekend. Tickets, information, and details are available at saysyou.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. Where if you follow that Join the Fun link, we'll show you how to join the fun. So remember, that's Nashville, Tennessee in September, Hartford and Milwaukee, Wisconsin in October, Syracuse in November, and Boston in December. It's the fall schedule of live performances of Says You. Says You returns after this from home. Says You coming to our town? Where can I find old shows? Who played that music I heard last week? So many questions, all answered on our website at saysyou.net. There you can find tickets to tapings, dally on the Daily Dispatch, or access our complete archive. You can contribute a question to the show and absorb ridicule on a national scale. This and more at saysyou.net. That's S-A-Y-S-Y-O-U. That is the Tom Porter Quartet. Please help me thank Mr. Tom Porter on piano, Mr. Mark Barnett on the drums, Mr. Sam Sherry on the bass, and Frank Muscheri on the sax. Thanks, you guys. Gives me a chance also to thank our scorekeepers for this game. That's Mr. Alec Gustafson, sitting next to Mr. Benjamin Scherer. Thank you for keeping the score, guys. We have had a few moments with the word glin. We will go first to a grinning Carolyn Fay Fox.
Glin. A drink of gin with lemon. No. To glin is to render someone befuddled or confused.
To render someone befuddled or confused, you glin them.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that could be it. Or, Arnie, something else.
It's really a meteorological term, or a term used by meteorologists. It's a signal that bad weather is coming. And it's that time, if you look out on the horizon, you start seeing the sky get a little bit brighter and a little lighter, and all of a sudden, whoosh, and then you know that evil lurks. So it's the sky lightens and tells you that you better move over. Something bad's coming.
Sort of a harbinger of bad weather.
Yes, it's a harbinger of bad weather. I couldn't have put that better myself.
Okay, well, the sky lightens. Some bad weather going to be moving in there.
Yeah.
Okay, that's possible. Or, Paula, something else.
Well, you know, when I was a little girl, you wanted to be a journalist because you read Brenda Starr. Remember the comic strip Brenda Starr? And she had these...
I just wanted to date Brenda Starr.
I was, of a different persuasion. But anyway, I love those stars that always showed up in her eyes. But when I got into television, I learned that those stars don't come unless they use a star filter. So glin is the sparkle in an eye caused by the use of a star filter.
You see that glint in the eye, the Doris Day, the old glint in the Doris Day eye, that's caused by using a star filter on the camera. Boom, you get a glin. It could either be that, a sign of bad weather moving in, or to render someone totally confused. It is one of those three, and the choice, Tony, is yours.
Thank God logic isn't involved in this game.
Good, that's good.
That saves me an awful lot of time here. Both Arnie and Paula seem to be playing off of glint,
yeah.
Right? You know,
glow,
a
glimmer.
Glint, a glow, a glimmer in the sky, and the glint. Also, I mean, if it's a sparkle and it's known as a glint, why wouldn't they just simply say glint? Why would they be in such a hurry to shorten it to glin? I don't know, just because it's the only one left and because somehow it feels like a verb to me. Right. Rather than a noun, I would say
not
to
only
confuse
that, but,
or befuddled.
But we are befuddled by it, so therefore we should just honor that.
By cracky, we've been glinned. Yes. Glin, to glin him. Glin him a bit.
Right, it sounds, yeah.
Yeah.
Celtic.
So, yeah, exactly.
To befuddled.
So let's make it number one. Let's make it
to be
that young lady over there.
You think it's Carolyn's definition? To render someone befuddled. Carolyn, is that in fact what glin means?
No, but it's what I did.
10 points for the successful bluff. Okay, audience, what do you think? That's pretty evenly divided. I don't know what but someone was telling the truth. Who might that have been?
Glin, a lightening of the sky at the horizon, usually as a portent of bad weather.
Is what it is. 10 points.
Beautiful.
For Arnie's team.
Well done.
On the first Thursday of each month here at the University of Southern Maine, if you turn on the radio station, you can hear Joanne Federaco's Watch Your Language, a locally produced word game show. Joanne, are you here? There she is.
It's not her show. No, you're not here?
Oh, you're just one of
You're just one of the writers. Well, she must be pretty good at it because she contributes a question to our show today that represents a challenge of the first water. Joanne's test is called Film Flam. The following sets of three actors or three movies are all joined by a common thread. 10 points for deciphering that commonality.
Okay.
All right, there's
all
right. a common thread
so
between all of them.
It's a very broad category.
All right, Carolyn.
All right, Richard.
The common thread, Leslie Howard, Vivian Leigh, and Patrick Knowles.
Yeah. Aren't they all in Gone with the Wind?
Yeah.
Nope, not Patrick Knowles.
He isn't?
Patrick Knowles.
Is he? I don't know.
Patrick Knowles.
I don't think so.
And who, Vivian Leigh, Leslie Howard.
Leslie Howard.
They all wore hats very well.
Okay.
Yeah, that's true.
What do we know about Patrick Knowles? Anything?
I've never heard of Patrick
nothing.
Patrick Knowles.
You know nothing
Patrick
on
Knowles?
Him?
Yeah.
If you know nothing,
I don't know anything
we're
about him. They all met in rehab.
Like Olivier? Yeah, right.
They're all being joined, actually, I'll give you a hint. They're being joined by a character.
By a character.
Okay.
I have it. I've got it!
You have it?
Yep, got it.
Write it down.
Well, he's...
So would the character be Olivia de Havilland?
No.
A character.
Character, okay. Not an actress.
They're joined by a character, Ashley Wilkes, Scarlett O'Hara. Are those correct if we're going to play that part of it?
Yeah.
That we stick with the...
It's a name, yeah, the name of a character.
But I mean, if we go with Vivian Leigh and Leslie Howard's character names in Gone with the Wind, is this the right track?
Just to show you how this is played, I'm going to go to the other side. Murray,
okay, go ahead.
I have no idea who Patrick Knowles is, but they all played characters named Scarlett.
They absolutely did.
Oh, Scarlett, the Scarlet Pimpernel.
The Scarlet Pimpernel was Leslie Howard played the Scarlet Pimpernel.
Yeah.
Oh, you got to see, you got a round of applause there.
Who's Patrick Knowles?
Vivian Leigh, of course, Scarlett O'Hara, and Patrick Knowles played Will Scarlet
in the Adventures of Robin Hood.
Okay, that's so where we're headed. That's the road we're going down. I hope none of you had dinner plans.
All right, these are.
That was a whole study, really. Never mind.
These are very, very hard. But let's see who steps up on these. Try this one, Tony.
Mm-hmm.
The common thread. My Own Private Idaho, Forbidden Planet, and 10 Things I Hate About You.
Oh, I know. We know this. Yeah, they're all based on Shakespeare plays.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, right.
Which one, though?
Voices from the ether tell me that they were all based on plays by Shakespeare.
Yes,
that's
true.
Exactly right.
I do know...
That's very good.
Forbidden Planet is The Tempest.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
Forbidden Planet is
The Tempest.
10 Things I Hate About You is...
Taming of the Shrew.
And My Own Private Idaho is Henry IV, Part 1.
Parts 1 and 2. But,
May we have extra points for that?
No.
No, I think you did. I don't know. We'll have to see. We'll have to see how it works out.
We'll have to see.
Yeah. Try this one. Okay, Arnie, this is a tribute to you. Let's see if you can get this. Common thread. Sideways.
Okay.
Gidget. And The Secret Life of Walter Mitty.
Okay.
This is my favorite question of the day. This was my personal favorite.
So it's not California.
Does this have anything to do with the actors that are in it?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Oh, that's it.
Got it. Okay, they all have letters in their last name. It's Sandra O, Sideways.
Yeah.
Sandra D. In Gidget, and Danny K. in Walter Mitty.
Wow.
Could someone get a glass of water for Mr. Reisman, please? It's a little... Try this one, Lenore. Common thread. Burt Lancaster. Why did I say Lancaster? Burt Lancaster. Rod Taylor. And Jeff Daniels.
Oh, boy.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Something to do with the circus?
Burt
Lancaster, Rod Taylor, And Jeff Daniels.
I am absolutely at a loss.
Rod Taylor was in H.G. Wells' The Time Machine.
He was also in The Birds.
Was he? Okay, The Birds.
Isn't that Rod Taylor? Man of Alcatraz, The Birds.
Bird movies? Yes. So what was the Birds. Jeff Daniels yeah. was in...
He was in The Squid and the Whale.
Dumb and Dumber, my personal favorite.
But it's about birds.
It's something, a common thread is birds.
The common thread, I have to give it to him, is birds. That's right. Do you know the Jeff Daniels movie?
What was the Jeff Daniels reference?
Fly Away Home.
What? Fly Away Home.
Fly Away Home. Try this one, Paula. My Fair Lady, West Side Story, and The King and I.
They're all musicals.
Yeah, we got that.
Yep.
Oh, again, are we talking actors?
In a way.
Well, okay, that's not right then.
In a way? What is in a way?
When you hear the answer, you'll know why In a Way was totally appropriate.
Okay, My Fair Lady.
That's a pretty
West
big
Side
hit.
West Side Story,
actually.
King and I. So it's not has nothing to do with writers and lyricists, and no, they're all different.
Does it have to do with language at all?
No, it does not.
Was The King and I based on something else?
Does it have to do with the names of actors in them?
No.
That's what I asked.
It does not.
Somebody's in the audience got it. Go home. You leave.
Go ahead.
Now.
Obviously, Joanne
can't... Put us out of our misery.
Joanne can't answer this, but does anyone else know?
Oh, they didn't
Marnie Nixon.
Yes.
Let me explain.
Marnie Nixon sang the lead female part in all three movies, but you never saw her because she was singing off camera.
That's exactly
she sang
right.
For Natalie Wood. She sang because for Audrey Hepburn.
Audrey Hepburn can't sing.
All I can say is, none of the lead actresses, Audrey Hepburn, Natalie Wood, or Deborah Kerr, actually sang in that movie. Marnie Nixon did and dubbed her voice. Anonymously.
Great question.
And, that's a great question.
That is just a great question. That is a really good question. Try this one. You get this one, I won't believe it. There you go, Murray. Common thread. Cabaret. Yes. Clute. And Girl Interrupted.
Wow. Talk about... time passing between.
No, I don't know enough of
Cabaret, Clute.
That all has to do with women who...
Yeah.
Didn't wear much under trench coats.
Well, women who... I mean, it's just kind of...
You were right to go to the actresses. I will say that.
The actresses are...
Was it their first Academy Award?
What?
So if it's film, so it's Liza Minnelli,
Jane Fonda, and who was in Girl Interrupted?
I don't know who was in Girl Interrupted.
Wasn't it Angelina Jolie?
They're all the daughters of movie stars.
Well, not
movie stars.
You know what? I got to give them some points for that. Give them 3 points for that.
Now, three!
You keep talking, Murray. You'll be down to zero.
Arnie, help him out.
Well, they all had fathers in the business. I mean, Liza Minnelli. No, they weren't movie stars. Liza Minnelli's father wasn't a movie star. He was a director.
Yeah.
Vincent Minnelli.
Not only was he a director, he was an Academy Award-winning director.
Okay, and Henry Fonda, Jane's father, was Academy Award-winning.
Is that it?
And Angelina... His father is John Voight, who also won the Academy Awards.
All three were Academy Award-winning actresses who had Academy Award-winning fathers.
Oh.
There you go, guys.
Well,
we got the Academy Award-winning actresses. We said Academy Award-winning actresses.
Give them another point. Give them one more point.
Thank you.
Let's go on to round four. Which is Tony's team's chance to have a little fun at Webster's expense. One of you will correctly define the following word to Will Bluff. 10 points, Carolyn, if your team can find the rose among thorns. Take a few seconds to come up with a definition for the word broccoli. B-R-O-C-H-I-T-Y. Broccoli. Gentlemen?
Thank you.
can hear Says You Again for free on any of the stations that stream our show. Just follow the High Definitions radio stations link on our website, find a convenient time, and listen again and again. For copies of this show or any other in our history, you can find downloads at saysyou.net. Just follow that show downloads link and find high-quality copies available. Briefly, Says You pauses. Just long enough for a few interstitial announcements. We'll be right back. Just a quick reminder, Says You stops in Hartford, Connecticut, Friday, October 12th, for one night only at the University of Hartford. And November 16th and 17th, we return to Syracuse, New York, for a little upstate wordplay. Add that to our September shows in Nashville, Tennessee, our October foray to Milwaukee, and our end-of-the-year special in Boston, and you have this year's fall schedule for Says You.
That is the Tom Porter Quartet. Thank you very much, guys. Giving us a little time with the word brockety, we will go first to Tony Khan.
Probably Mark Twain, I think it was, put it best when he said that some characters' teeth were so bad he could eat corn through a picket fence. That poor individual suffered from brockety.
In what fashion?
In every fashion you could imagine.
So basically, the definition is
somebody whose smile is a chaos of twisted dentures. A person whose lips are sore and bleeding from the chaos they must contain. He who suffers. suffers from a crookedness of denture.
He? Brockety is a he?
Mark Twain's autobiography is number one selling book.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we're...
It's a condition.
It's a condition.
Yeah, bad teeth.
The condition of crookedness, bad teeth. Okay, crooked, bad teeth. Or
not
Lenore,
anymore.
Something else.
Well, it is a condition, indeed, that afflicts men, but this particular word refers to women. Is anyone familiar with the Saturday Night Live where they do the takeoff on the Lawrence Welk show and Kristen Wiig comes out and she's Judy and she's got her hair, a big receding hairline on a woman, and that's what brockety is.
The high dome.
She's a very, very high dome. Actually, I think what queen? One of the queens had that. Queen Elizabeth had a horribly receding hairline, but it's in relation mostly to to a woman.
A high forehead on a woman. I think
a high forehead,
also known as a five head.
Okay, fine. The high,
would that be your head size,
a big
or
receding,
your weight, madam?
A big receding hairline, usually on a woman, is a brockety. Could be that. Or something else. Murray?
It's a very recent word. It was very important. It's historic because in the 2008 election, the swing or undecided voter would sometimes ask, are you voting for Barack? Well, I'm kind of Barack-a-tee, but I'm not, you know, really. That was my first choice.
Thank you for that boo, ladies and gentlemen. I appreciate that.
It is a noun. We're all agreed on that. And it is in churches, when you go into the little chapels off the side of a cathedral, there are ornamental tiles in a church, are bracketees. It's a bracketee.
An ornamental tile in a church is a bracketee. It is either that, the high forehead you sometimes see on royalty, or the condition of crooked and bad teeth.
Oh my
Disgustingly
God.
Enough, it's one of those. And the choice, Carolyn, is yours.
All right, let's see. Okay. Bad teeth, receding hairline, ornamental tiles.
I think it's
church.
All of them, actually.
Well, your bad teeth could be ornamental tiles.
Yeah. You know, it's a good thing I'm looking at your receding hairline. Otherwise, I have to stare at that mouth of ornamental tiles.
I kind Maybe of it's... wanted to be that receding hairline in a woman. I've always been fascinated by that Queen Elizabeth look. And surely it must have a name.
Maybe
but it doesn't sound right, does it?
No.
Unless her Maybe father was Telly Savalas or something.
Receding teeth.
Receding crooked, a condition of a crooked smile.
Or a bad hairline.
Go ahead. Flip it.
What do you think?
Paula?
Paula?
I don't know. I just want to go with the middle one for fun.
The middle one for fun? The receding hairline?
Yeah.
And Arnie?
Well, I was going with the teeth, so you're not...
Decider.
I'll go with the teeth. Teeth that flossing cannot help.
Right.
All right.
Teeth that have a receding hairline.
Tony, they say that Brockety is the crooked bad teeth. That was your bluff? Is that, in fact, what it is?
Brockety, a condition which could turn a piece of dental floss into a lesson in square knot time.
Wait a minute.
Crookedness of teeth. Yes, they're right.
Crooked teeth.
10 points. Let's close tonight a celebration of Maine's favorite ruminant. Please answer the following Cervatic questions about moose.
Moose.
Moose. Ooh.
All
right.
Moose. We have several here tonight, huh?
All right. Carolyn.
Yes.
It originated in Sweden, but tell me, what's the moose test?
The moose test?
Yes.
It originated in Sweden. This wouldn't be like a crash test dummy thing where they were crashing Volvos into moose.
Yes.
Oh, yes, it would. I don't believe you got that.
Yeah. Carolyn, you're spending entirely too much time on the internet. You know.
Among the moose, that was known as the Volvo Challenge.
I have to say, it was both Volvo and Saab knew that the size and height of moose made collisions very dangerous.
Yes.
So they developed an avoidance and recovery test performed over an S-shaped course to improve their cars. I don't know if they're now moose resistant, but I'm sure they're moose retardant.
Moose retardant.
I have no idea. Tony, where is the bell feature of the moose found, and what is its function?
The bell feature?
Yes.
Well, let's see. It's got to have something to do with the horns, obviously.
It actually doesn't. I was surprised to find this out.
Okay, let's dispense with the horns. I thought perhaps where the horn of the moose meets the horn of the
is
car.
That big
but that's
waddle that moose have, that big...
The bell feature?
Yeah, that big flush that waves back and forth like the knocker of a bell. I don't know it.
And where is that located?
Under the chin. I mean, it's in...
The waddle?
You know
the
something?
Moose waddle?
That's exactly right. It's It's actually the dewlap. It's the dewlap, right?
Yeah.
It's the dewlap is the bell feature.
Yeah.
That you're absolutely right. Do you have any idea what its function is?
Well, I've been intimate with so many moose that it's what its function is.
Yeah,
it's
supposed
to
hang down, go, swing, what?
No,
if a predator
I know what
bites it,
is.
It doesn't bleed.
Well, you know what? That's as good an answer as any. Because the answer is, scientists have absolutely no idea whatsoever.
Well,
you know, Richard.
I don't know, Richard.
It's actually, it's got a use. It's for polishing the windshield of a Volvo.
Possibly.
I've always thought it makes them look very wise.
Arnie.
Yeah.
One of Arnie's favorite baseball players of all time was William Joseph Scarron. Mm-hmm. How does a kid from Chicago get a nickname like Moose?
Oh, boy.
Moose.
Okay.
Remember Moose?
Oh, first baseman, New York Yankees, going back to the late 50s, early 60s.
That's yes, right.
I remember. Moose Scarron. And it was like, and they always used to yell, Moose, 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 Moose. Yeah. So,
well, was he huge or what?
No, not particularly.
He wasn't that big. He was,
no.
You know, good
yeah.
size.
Scarron.
Was he ever hit by a Volvo?
It doesn't say.
Does it have anything to do with the sound itself?
Yes.
Yes, it does.
Yes, it does.
Okay.
It was a nickname Moose. That was Moose. Given to him when he was 7 years old.
Moose. All right.
By
and he had an enormous waddle under him.
By some of the...
By his Aunt Belle.
Yeah, by some of the nastier kids in the neighborhood, but you want to take a shot at
Bill.
It?
Bill
what?
You got to figure that goes back to 1937, 38,
so.
39.
No kidding. Really? No, here it is.
Oh.
Moose.
Murray actually got this.
Wow.
Yeah, he
did.
Is it got anything to do with his
wow.
hair?
No.
Yes.
No,
it's his hair.
Okay. It has everything to do
it
with his hair.
It was sticking up like a cowlick.
No, that's nope. not it, but it has everything to do with his hair.
Okay, how do we get the moose? You mean, and he moosed his hair?
No, and he didn't moose. Murray, where would moose have come from?
From Benito Mussolini.
That
oh,
is
Mussolini.
Exactly right.
Oh.
Wow.
His father, Moose Scarron's father, at the age of 7, gave him the haircut to end all
oh
haircuts. Just the worst haircut anyone had ever seen.
And
the kid said, you look like Benito Mussolini.
Moose.
And the name stuck. Moose Scarron.
Moose.
Wow.
Great baseball player of the 50s and 60s yep. and one of Arnie's favorites.
And also played against the Yankees when he was with the Dodgers in the World
Series. Try this one, Lenore. What is the and I'm going to get help from the audience on this, the radio audience. What is the biological reason a male moose sheds its antlers annually?
His wife can't stand.
Can't stand those antlers.
He finds a mate and he's no longer horny.
What do you think? Do I leave that in?
Yeah.
All right, I'll leave it in. I'll leave it in.
The
you know you're closer
reason.
Than you know actually.
Really?
Yeah.
The whatever the moose has to put into growing the antlers is needed for another purpose after he becomes a dada.
You know something?
Yeah.
That is exactly right. Very good, you guys.
Brilliant.
That is quite. It's for energy conservation. Now, is this true? It is. In other words, it takes so much during the to grow those puppies that during the winter months you need that energy elsewhere.
He needs a fresh set.
Every spring.
Yes.
Every spring.
And a perm.
Paula, moose, the word moose, derives from the Algonquin word moosa, M-O-O-S-W-A. Knowing how Native Americans used to name things, do you have any guesses as to its translation?
Ugly.
I think moose.
Looks like an elk, maybe.
Moosa.
Moosa. You know how they name things?
Like a huge.
No, not.
Moving mountain.
Moving mountain. That's great. You're getting points for that.
Okay.
You're definitely getting points for moving
water
mountain.
Water deer.
Moose.
Does it mean like some unanimal object that moves? Or
No, the water deer was great, I have to say. That was really good.
They're
slow
yell?
Gallop or something, or slow
Or their
move?
Yell?
Solo? The fact
oh,
that they're
their
solitary?
Sound? Does it have anything to do with their sound?
No, but these are such great. I think 6 points is definitely in order here. Well, no, I mean, you've done very well. The guesses are very creative. Any help from the other side?
It's Algonquin for good eating.
It's all about eating, that's for sure.
Oh, the moose has a big appetite.
Yeah, does anyone in the audience know? No, twig eater.
Twig eater,
because it ate the bark off the trees, it ate everything, and that's what it means. Musa in Algonquin means twig eater, but twig 6 points for very creative answers on that side, especially water deer. I really like that. And finally, and I'll give you some help on this, but nothing...
A Greek meat dish.
Yeah. Nothing riding on this but the whole game, Murr. Alexander Anderson Jr. belongs in this category. For what reason?
Alexander Anderson could be Sparky Anderson. No, could be Sandy.
Oh.
Sandy Anderson.
Oh, well, please.
Do you know this?
Moose.
Right?
Ice cream.
It's not
voice. He got it. I'll give you a hint for two points, but you know that's excellent.
Rocky
and Bullwinkle is exactly right. I believe Mr. Anderson just passed away recently. Did he not? Yes, it's too bad. A wonderful addition to this country was Rocky and Bullwinkle. Created those characters for Jay Ward. And that's how it went.
And there was a copyright. There was a copyright problem. They didn't actually give him credit. It was a very interesting obituary.
Oh, I didn't know that. I have to read the obituary.
That was a little bit of a...
Oh, well, I'm glad I brought
him
up.
He was not really rewarded for that properly, and it was later that he was actually acknowledged as being the original.
Well, all I can say is that was a real good time to come up with that answer, Tony, because that gave you 77 points and a 2-point victory. Tony's team winning this week. Congratulations. That is all we have time for. That is all we have time for here in Portland. We cannot thank the University of Southern Maine enough for their unbelievable hospitality. Bob Caswell, Sherry Phillips, and Mako Bates, you guys really made this a pleasure to be here, and you gave us a home when we needed a home. We are most grateful to the University of Southern Maine. We are also... We are also incredibly grateful to the people of Portland for showing up on short notice. Thanks so much, guys, for coming out. Sure, and Philip Salkind are the writers. Noah Cole and Lincoln Clapp man the meters. And Zach Moore is the associate producer and webmaster. Once every few weeks, we say that this show is best when we get your questions, when we get your comments, and most of all, when you show up. Thanks, Portland, for showing up. See you next week. Support for CISU in Portland comes from the University of Southern Maine. On the web at usm.maine.edu. Benjamin, give him the skinny.
CISU, created and produced by Pippin and Finch. Boston.
We have an activity here called sorting people.
When you talk about race...
What do I look like to you?
Asian. Native American.
Everybody says they know it when they see it.
White.
Hispanic.
But they come up with complete confusion if they're asked to define it.
Race is just like...
I don't know. I'm not sure.
Race.
What really can you say about it?
On the next Radiolab.
Sunday night at 8 o'clock.
celebrating 50 years of community service and community support, this is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 10 o'clock.